From Gimlet, you're listening to Startup, the podcast about what it is really like to start a business. I'm Alex Blumberg.
And I'm Lisa Chow. And this is episode 7, which contains some explicit language, so you've been warned.
And we're going to start here, where we left off a couple episodes ago. That moment just before Dating Ring did its big relaunch. They'd made a bunch of changes to their technology and to their website. They'd given customers the opportunity to upload pictures and profiles. And Dating Ring's CEO, Lauren, told our producer, Lisa Pollack, that this was a really exciting moment for them.
Here was something we'd been working on for 2 months that was just layouts and test pages. And all of a sudden, it was like a real live, breathing product that people were using.
I know. Do you have this fear, like when you throw a party, you know, is anyone going to show up? Yeah. Did you have any of that fear?
Yeah, of course. And I was watching as their profiles came in and people started flooding the site. For the first day, we were getting like 30 people an hour. I mean, more people than we could review. And it felt so cool, as if we were like building a Lego castle and then like the castle is real life and you step into fantasy land.
Oh, it became real when the people showed up.
Yeah. We finally, after all this time, had a dating app that we were managing. And people showed up for the party.
Lots of people, 4,000 to be exact, joined in the first month. Customers were rushing to sign up for paid subscriptions. By November, Dating Ring had brought in almost $50,000 in revenue, more money than they'd ever made in a single month.
It felt for the first time like the company was working. We had a dating company that we were going to get to run forever.
Today on the program, what happened after that first month, and just how long exactly is forever in startup time?
So with the launch of their new website and tech product, and with their very successful month of signups, Dating Ring was now much better positioned to do something they'd had trouble with before, fundraise. Remember, the dream that they'd had since their days at Y Combinator was to become a massive billion-dollar business. And the standard path by which you do that, you launch your tech product, you get some initial traction, and then you go raise a bunch more investment money to make it bigger, to hire more engineers, to build mobile apps on all different platforms, and to hire marketing teams to attract new users.
And as you might remember, the last time Lauren fundraised, it was one of the most terrible experiences of her startup career, one that ended with the company in chaos and Lauren in the trough of sorrow. But Lauren thought this time things were going to be different. After all, they weren't just pitching an idea anymore. They had a product.
So Lauren got to work, reaching out to people she'd pitched before, getting in touch with new investors. And that included a group called Golden Seeds. Golden Seeds is an investment firm that focuses on female founders. Companies with at least one female founder can apply for funding. And it's an intense process. There are several rounds of interviews, but there's a lot in it for an early stage company like Dating Ring. Golden Seeds writes checks for up to $2 million. So Lauren decided it couldn't hurt to apply. Less than a week after she did, she got an email. She and Emma had been granted a chance to pitch their company to Golden Seeds.
A few days after that pitch, I was recording with Lauren in her apartment, and she gave me an update.
When I was walking to lunch with my mom, Golden Seeds called and said, like, we did amazing and they want to move forward. The person who called me was like, you really knew your numbers. Everyone was so impressed. We liked you as a founder. We really liked your co-founder. And she was like, on all of my calls in the past, like for the people I've been assigned, we haven't invited them to move forward, but we're inviting you.
Moving forward meant coming back and making their pitch a second time in an office in Midtown Manhattan. And it went well. They were so excited after their pitch, they recorded an audio diary right there on the spot.
I think that went amazing.
I felt so good. Talking to them made me feel like re-excited about our product. They understood the problem we were trying to solve. They understood why things that were out there weren't appealing for the demographic we're going for. I just want to like work with them.
And again, they made the cut and were invited to pitch for the final round in front of a bigger audience this time, 100 investors affiliated with Golden Seeds. And this was when the idea really started to sink in for Lauren and Emma. It was possible that they could be handed a check for $1 million, for $2 million.
The big day arrived. Lauren and Emma showed up an hour early, opened their laptops, and reviewed their numbers one final time. They'd have 15 minutes to make their pitch to a room full of investors. We weren't allowed to record the pitch, but Emma and Lauren recorded an audio diary during one of the breaks to to give us a recap.
All right, so we just got off the stage of pitching to the forum.
That was, first of all, I think it went so well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely nervous.
But we should still be proud of ourselves.
Oh, yeah, definitely that. But it's just if after all of this work, there's no in the middle, right? If it was like a second place prize or a third prize, or like you definitely get $10,000 for reaching this level, or like even if we don't choose to invest, one or two investors will reach out. I mean, we did just pitch 100 people.
Right. So we wait now.
Yep.
They waited in the lobby with a bunch of other companies that were waiting to hear the news. And the way it works is the investors vote. So about a half an hour later, a man, their main point person, came up to them to share the news. Their pitch had not been accepted.
How are you feeling?
Shot down again, but not dead.
And for someone who just got rejected, Lauren sounds happy. And there's a reason. Because of what happened right after they got rejected. A couple of individual members of Golden Seeds pulled them aside and said, you know, even though the group as a whole passed on you guys, we are still interested in your pitch. These investors told them they wanted to personally invest in Dating Ring.
I'm still hesitant because I'm like, the check's not in the bank.
Yes, totally, 100%.
But it's been a while since anyone said, you know, they wanted to give us money, so that's nice. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we'll get three checks.
So Lauren followed up with these investors, and a few weeks later...
Hi, how are you? Come on in.
How are you?
Lauren and Emma greeted Deborah Kay and Barbara Rao in Deborah's apartment in Manhattan. Deborah had laid out a spread of sandwiches and sweets, and there was some small talk at the very start, but they dove into the business pretty quickly. Here's Lauren.
We're not, like, going out to directly compete with Tinder. Like, they've done a really great job at carving out where they are. Mm-hmm. But it's more with Match, with the demographic on Match, that's where it's the most outdated, that people are still paying, you know, $20 to $40 a month just to gain access to lists of profiles, and it takes so much time. And there's so little return. It's just not a great service for anyone, but especially for people who are seriously thinking, I want to find a spouse and I have disposable income and I just want a higher quality service overall.
Right. The time element is probably the biggest thing. I mean, as somebody, so I'm divorced, mm-hmm. and it took me a few years to even want to do a dating service. Yeah. What you're doing is completely disruptive, because the thing about the current system, unless you're doing Tinder, which is, like you say, is just a swiping, you do have to pore over a lot of profiles. It takes a huge amount of time to construct your own profile.
Yep.
And then if you really want to do it right, you have to send 10 emails a day out to prospective guys, and hopefully you're going to get one of them to write back to you, and chances are good that you won't get any.
Yep. Right. And the amount of time you have to take in terms of crafting those emails, going through their profiles, going through your own profile.
Exactly.
And unlike other investors Lauren and Emma had pitched, these investors had experience with the problems Dating Ring was trying to solve.
So, I did a paid matchmaking service, and they guaranteed you for $1,000, you got three matches over a period of a year, I think it was. Mm-hmm. The thing was, the quality of the matches were not good at all.
Yeah.
So,
but like a lot of the other investor meetings, the questions got tough, and they got tough pretty quickly.
When you work it out, what's your average cost per match?
So matchmakers are doing 10 matches an hour, so we're paying about $2 a match. And then if we add on like additional customer service time...
Well, no, I'm asking what you charge per match. To the customer.
Oh yeah, sorry. So we just changed our prices from $120 for 3 months to $240 for 3 months. So it's $80 per month, so $20 a match.
And $3 a match is what you're charging?
Is our cost. And $20 a match
is
to,
what we're charging
to the user. Yep.
Your cost isn't
$3
a match.
No, plus all the overhead. But I mean all the time that a matchmaker is spending on that match.
Your cost per match is much higher.
Yes.
Because you did 10,000 matches, you're paying $140,000 in salary, mm-hmm. so that's $14 a match, and that doesn't include advertising costs.
Yes.
So you've got and that doesn't include overhead. So just your salary cost is $14 a match for your 10,000 matches.
Yeah.
So you've got a really big nut to crack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a very labor-intensive business.
Deborah and Barbara wanted to know a bunch of things. What's Dating Ring's secret sauce in hiring the matchmakers? What makes a matchmaker better than a computer algorithm? How many of the matches are leading to actual dates? What's Dating Ring doing to get people to sign up for the service? After about an hour and a half, Lauren and Emma ran to catch a train.
Talking to you. We'll be in touch with you.
Yeah.
Thank
Great.
You.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Have a good one.
They debriefed in a cab on the way to the station.
Okay, thoughts?
I don't know. I just saw her looking at our numbers and, like, maybe they're thinking, they've got something, they've got work, but we could help them and it would be fun.
Right.
Or they're thinking, this is a total mess.
I stayed behind with the investors, Deborah Kay and Barbara Rejo.
Tell me what you thought about this meeting.
I have some concerns with them.
Deborah says she's worried about how labor-intensive the business is, the high cost of personnel, and how Dating Ring is going to acquire the 5,000 paying members Lauren's projecting for 2015. At the time, they only had 400.
Right. I saw Metformin. I didn't, you know, pick them for investing in them, you know, but I gave them another opportunity here, and I'm not compelled by them, no.
Barbara, on the other hand, was less certain than Deborah. She said she loved the concept.
This could be great, but it's not clear. You know, it could go, it could really soar or it could really flop. And that I'm not sure I'm out. You know, I mean, I could still write a check, you know, as I think about it, but I need to be convinced more.
2 days after they left that meeting, Lauren recorded this audio diary.
So I got the email today from the two angel investors we met with from Golden Seeds, and I was not at all surprised. It was not a fun email to receive.
They were turned down again.
This news that these investors from Golden Seeds had passed came in the spring of 2015. And at that point, Lauren and Emma had been trying to get their company off the ground for 2 solid years. 2 years of essentially the same cycle, getting their hopes up, getting their hopes dashed, getting slammed publicly, then getting into YC, having initial success fundraising, and then having all of it dry up suddenly. All of which was against the backdrop of trying to make a company work that wasn't totally cooperating. It was a grind. Here's Emma from an audio diary around this time.
So it's almost 11 o'clock at night, and I just got home from work, which, you know, I think is a very typical startup thing. You know, during YC, they said a lot of stuff about, you know, this is your baby, this is your life, you work 24/7, founders work 100 hours a week, that's what's expected. And I get that, I do. And that's what we did for the first year. But my oldest sister died about 6 years ago when she was 38. And she was a midwife, and she didn't have kids, and she wasn't married. And when she got sick, I remember taking a walk on the beach with her, and she walked by herself, and she picked up all of these shells, and she came back, and she said, "This shell is for the kids I'm going to have when I get better. And this shell is for the wedding I'm going to have when I get better." And all these things she was going to do with her life that she hadn't gotten the chance to do. And I'm not saying it's because of her career or because of anything except that, you know, life doesn't work out the way you want it to. And God, I don't want to look back and say, oh, I spent the last 3 years of my life in my office. And then I wonder, you know, what business do I have being a startup founder if I am not willing to commit the lifestyle? Then I can step down, you know? I don't have to be COO. I can just be a founder. But I don't know. It seems like that'd be so hard to, you know, relinquish control or or watch someone else make these decisions about something I've put so much of myself into.
Coming up, Emma and Lauren discover a magic bullet, a bullet that might rescue their company, a bullet that hit us very close to home. Welcome back to Startup. I'm Alex Blumberg.
And I'm Lisa Chow.
So remember the moment we started the show with. After their relaunch, when Dating Ring got 4,000 new users and a ton of new revenue, and Lauren wondered if this was the new reality, if it would last forever, that turned out to be a dramatic overestimate, unless by forever you mean exactly 1 month.
Right. I have in front of me a graph of Dating Ring's revenue. And as you can see, in November, during the relaunch, there's a huge spike. And then it takes a nosedive in December, and it just goes down. So we have fewer people signing up, and they were bringing in a lot less money.
And of course, they wondered why. The improvements they made to their service were real. But the problem was one of scale. And to understand why, it helps to sort of understand the problem of finding a match for someone. Finding a match is not an easy thing to do. And if you're in a relationship, think of how long it took you to find your partner, how many people you met, how many dates and encounters and conversations you had to go through. Most of us, I'd argue, it's hundreds or thousands of people we've gone through before we find the person that we end up together with. Dating, in other words, is a volume game. And if you're a dating company, your biggest asset, more than a sleek website or photos or profiles or even matchmakers, is the number of users you have. Here's Emma.
We just didn't have enough users to make it good. If you sign up and you only have 15 matches, your experience isn't going to be great. But if you sign up and you have 500 matches, you will have a better experience. So you will think the product is better. So, like, it wasn't even like we wanted new users just so the number could go up and it would look good. It's like the more users we get, the better the service is.
They were back to this problem they've been struggling with since the company began, a problem they hadn't fully grappled with ever. When you're launching a dating site, your number one goal has to be growth.
And this problem of getting users is not unique to Dating Ring. It's been a challenge for even the most successful dating site founders.
My name's Gary Kremen. I'm a serial entrepreneur and serial idiot.
That's how he puts it. Gary Kremen is the founder of an online dating company you may have heard of, Match.com. It's the first and still one of the largest online dating companies out there. I met Gary at his house in Palo Alto and told him I'd been reporting on an online dating startup.
Oh my God, I get pitched those like every day.
Do you really?
Oh, literally, literally, literally. I have a standard email I could show you.
Oh.
Because I get pitched so much.
Oh, I want to.
Do you want to see my email?
Yeah, I want you to read your email to me.
Yeah, okay. It might offend some people. Thank you for your email.
Oh my God.
And reaching out to me.
This is I'm looking at this email and it looks complicated. Bullet points.
Yeah, right. Bullet point number one. If you're looking for money, or if you have a convertible note with some big cap on it, or
Gary's generic email is almost 2 pages long, and it's basically a checklist of all the different kinds of dating startups he will not invest in. So, for example, if you're a startup that came out of an accelerator program like Y Combinator, he's not interested. He doesn't trust those places. If your valuation is too high, he's not interested. If you don't have a track record, he's not interested. And the vast majority of the people pitching a great new dating app, they fall into the automatic no category.
You know what I usually tell those people? You should go see Scott Hoffman. And they go, who's Scott Hoffman? I go, he's my dentist. He invests in startups. I'm serious. I could show you so many emails.
And Gary tells me that he's so picky because the vast majority of dating companies don't have a plan to solve the one fundamental thing you need to solve to succeed.
You know, how do you differentiate yourself from the 3,000 other ads that pop up and the spammers and stuff like that? It's the challenge that sometimes you could have a great product, but you can't break through the noise, or it takes a lot of money to break through the noise with your differentiation.
And Lauren had heard this message herself about the importance of breaking through the noise from another successful online dating company founder. He wouldn't let us use his name on the podcast, but he founded a dating company that's been around for a few years now. And Lauren told our producer, Lisa Pollack, that this founder gave her some feedback on Dating Ring.
And he said, this isn't a dating company. This is nowhere close to a dating company.
What does that mean? Like, obviously, your date. What did he mean by that?
I mean, he meant our numbers weren't even close to being in the realm of any real online dating company. It would be like, you know, for someone who has a podcast with like 10 listeners, and they're like, great, so what do I do next? How do I start getting sponsors?
I don't know about you, Lisa, but I found this to be a very helpful analogy.
Yes, indeed. And when I've talked to founders of successful dating sites over the last couple of months, I've learned that they all had a special thing that helped them solve this fundamental problem, something they did to set themselves apart, cut through the noise, and get the rapid growth they needed. So Gary Kremen's strategy with Match.com was simply to be the first. When he launched Match in the 1990s, it was pretty much the only online dating site out there. The idea was so novel, it was growing 2 to 3% a day.
And everyone since then has had to come up with some other way of cutting through the noise. For OkCupid, which launched in 2004, they had a novel strategy that involved being a free site, for one, and then writing these super viral blog posts. Christian Rutter is one of the co-founders of OkCupid.
By far, the most effective strategy for us was to appeal to the users ourselves, or to people, everyday people. Like 9 of 10 people coming to the blog were not OkCupid users. We really wanted people to read the post itself. You just make it a little funny. You make it interesting. You don't sit and talk about how great your company is because nobody gives a shit about that. So you make it a real article that people can like laugh at and repeat and remember certain facts and jokes from it. And, you know, and if the thing is good and the title of the thing is good and it can take care of itself.
Tinder, of course, the latest online dating hit, had a different hook, swiping, basically turning online dating into a game, taking that old internet pastime that I remember, hot or not hot, remember that, and grafting it onto the top of a dating app. Dating Ring needed something, anything of its own, to cut through the noise. And in December of 2014, a novel strategy presented itself to them. Us. From Gimlet, I'm Alex Blumberg, and you are listening to the first episode of the brand new season of Startup. This season, we're following a whole new startup, which my co-host, Lisa Chow.
We, of course, had no idea that we were their last-ditch effort to cut through the noise of online dating. When I first talked to them in the winter, it was right after their relaunch. Revenue had just shot up, and here were two women with a new take on dating. And unlike other companies we spoke to around that time, they were very open to allowing us to follow them. They pretty much said yes without hesitation. But not everyone involved with Dating Ring was on board with their plan.
So as a confession, like I advised the Dating Ring not to do your podcast.
That's Kevin Hale, Dating Ring's advisor from their days at Y Combinator. And Kevin is still involved with the company. Dating Ring sends him regular updates and goes to him for advice. And his advice about us? Don't do it.
They're in a crucial moment where they've got to figure out this hypothesis and what's sort of going to make it work. And for me, I feel like anything that takes away from that makes you sort of wonder. It's like, oh, in the life of your company, at any moment, were you doing 100% focused on what was needed to make it succeed? There's definitely like this easy argument you can sort of make is like, oh, you know, the startup podcast has an awesome audience that they sort of want to attract and they'll have this opportunity to do so. But for them, like this is the worst case scenario is they throw people into a leaky bucket.
What do you mean by that? Tell me what that means.
That means if you don't have product market fit, like the product's not great, then if you throw a whole bunch of people at the product, they'll just fall right through, right? They'll have a bad experience or they'll be confused or whatever is going to be there. And then you don't have the optimal experience that you deliver to the users. What I worry about this thing is like, do you want your users to know the shit show that your company probably is? And that is not saying that the Dating Ring is a shit show. It's every startup is a shit show.
Letting a podcast like us inside to see that stuff, it was a risk. But for Lauren and Emma, they needed to cut through the noise. It's hard to do that if you don't take risks. Coming up on a future episode of Startup, we find out the answer to that question. Do you, in fact, want the world to know what a shit show your company is? We'll have scenes from future episodes in a minute after these words from our sponsors. Coming up on the next episode of Startup, we discuss the relationship that can make or break Dating Ring's business. The relationship between the co-founders, Lauren and Emma.
They're not kidding when they say it's like a marriage. The things that are bothering you, they turn into resentments, and the resentments calcify, and then it's really hard to chip away at them. So that's the position we're in.
That's all coming up on the next episode of Startup.
This episode was reported, edited, and produced by Lisa Pollock and Caitlin Roberts. We also got editing help from Caitlin Kenny.
The Startup website was designed in partnership with Athletics. Mark Phillips wrote and performed our theme song. Build Buildings wrote and performed our special ad music. The Reverend John Delore mixed this episode. Season 2 of Startup features brand new original music written and performed by our own John Delore, along with his bandmates Jordan Scanella, Sam Merrick, Osama McGregor, John Lado, Dominic Falicaro. Their band is named hotmoms.gov.
To subscribe to the podcast, go to iTunes and subscribe to Startup, or check out the Gimlet Media website, gimletmedia.com.
Hotmoms.gov. You can follow us on Twitter at Podcast Startup, or me at Apex Lumberg, or you, Lisa Chow, at Lisa E. Chow. I'm Alex Bloomberg.
And I'm Lisa Chow. See you on the next episode of Startup.